It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. In the United States, single-sex colleges and universities have seen a steady decline in enrollment over the past few decades. With fewer students, these institutions are struggling to finance their schools, and many have had to change the makeup of the student population. The challenge of maintaining sufficient enrollment numbers led Seton Hill University in Greensburg to officially become coeducational in 2002, opening all academic programs to male students. Here to talk about what led up to that decision and how it's working out is Mary Ann Gwalick, Provost and Dean of the Faculty at Seton Hill University. Welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Thank you, Paul. Glad to be here.
Why did Seton Hill choose to go co-ed? What did the process look like?
Well, Seton Hill, like many small liberal arts women's college, faced an enrollment challenge. At the time we looked at going co-ed, there were less than 3% of college-age students, high school graduating seniors, who were interested in single-sex schools. And we decided that we could create a rich learning environment and invite men into that environment and also serve female students.
I believe that a figure that I looked at, in fact, I have it right in front of me, only 2% of high school girls say they would consider a women's college today.
Right, that's dropped down.
Less than two.
It was 3% when we went in 2002,
oh, I see. Okay.
And now it's covering around two.
Two. And so what does that tell you that women want out of a university education that they may not necessarily have been seeking years ago?
Well, I think you have to remember that when women's colleges were founded, at that point, some universities and colleges would not allow women to apply and enter. So you have that phenomena. Then as women's colleges developed and women were allowed more regularly to go into co-educational schools without a bias, women's colleges provided a particular, maybe more protected environment that was necessary at that time. And I think high school students coming out today have not had the extreme limitations that women two generations ago had to their experience.
And there were maybe more girls and all girls high schools, all boys secondary education.
It's actually interesting. When you look at the demographics, the secondary single-sex high schools at that time are not necessarily with the schools that fed all women's colleges.
Mm.
And in fact, in some stats tell you the opposite, but those certainly have also decreased, single-sex high schools.
And is this a part, maybe too, of preparing women for what the real world looks like? Years ago, you didn't see as many women in upper levels of management in certain corporations and businesses. Men and women are interfacing in the workplace on a regular basis now that may not have existed years ago. Does that change the dynamic?
Well, it certainly does. So there are two factors that you're looking at. One is we need enrollments, and so all the schools who are facing that, what the young graduating high school student, female student, is interested in. But probably the most challenging question is, how do you create a learning environment that is fit for the world that the students are going to go into? And these female students are going into industry and business and the sciences and the arts in a world that is much more used to seeing women enter and taking leadership roles. And so the dynamic of living in a co-educational learning experience may better prepare them to do that in their work experience.
We're talking with Mary Ann Gwalick. She's provost and dean of the faculty at Seton Hill University, which officially became coeducational in 2002. What were reactions from alumni and the surrounding community when that decision was made over 10 years ago?
I think we started talking about it many years before. In 1987, we started admitting men into our visual and performing arts area, so we had begun to bring men onto the campus. Our president and our board members talked pretty extensively with our alums and friends of the university, and it was clear that the majority of people understood that the option to keep the university alive and vibrant included the idea of going co-ed, and significantly believe we could continue to advocate for women and be co-educational, which was an essential and an important part at the university.
And how did going co-ed change the campus?
Well, there's some very specific and targeted ways. We added many more male restrooms. We extended beds. We got sturdier furniture. So those are the fun ways. It also
for which I'm sure all the male students were eternally grateful.
They were. I tell the story about a graduating basketball player who said to me, "Dr. Gowalek, my experience is great. Make the beds longer." Probably the more significant changes had to do with conscious pedagogy to maintain what's called universal design, making sure you can reach all students in the classroom, making sure that in our leadership programs we were attentive to making sure male and females could become active student leaders, and holistically expanding what was available in the co-curricular realm. And for Seton Hill, that meant adding a significant energy for a male sports program.
And was there anything that the school wished it had done differently during the process of transitioning from an all-women's college to a co-ed institution?
Mm-hmm. I think we overall had a very targeted and clear strategy. So we did fine with the vast majority of all of our constituents. The one challenge, and probably a way that we, when we look back at it, we didn't fully understand, is the grieving process, the mourning process that existing students who were at Seton Hill when we went to co-educational would feel. So kids, the young women who were freshmen, sophomores, and juniors, entered into one educational environment, and they had a change. And so for them, the identity shift was pretty great. And probably we could have been a little bit more attentive to their mourning process. And that was probably true of our most immediate alums.
How did that manifest itself?
Students were worried about men taking over exercise equipment. They were worried about the issue of leadership. They felt like they came to an environment where they were always going to be in the front ground, and all of a sudden they had to do some more immediate competing with men. Now, I think in the classroom, faculty and our support staff in the co-curricular area were sensitive to it. But when we look at it, I think when look back at it, knowing that that grieving process was going to be necessary probably wasn't in the forefront of our minds as much as we could have. Everything else, you know, we thought through in a very different way. And that's a process that simply, you know, for 18 to 21-year-olds takes some time.
So there were these fears and trepidations that women had. So how did it play out? Was it were their fears realized in any way?
Well, it's actually an interesting one. Simply by data numbers, we maintained our we didn't have increased retention attrition, which is what you were worried about. Our retention stayed strong. I think as we talked to the students at the end of each the first semester and then the second semester, what they were worried about, they didn't see. So they continued to have a good experience in the classroom, continued to have full voice. We continued to have significant female leadership in all the clubs. So as their experience told them that the environment stayed positive for them, any lingering fears went away.
And what was it like adding male sports teams? And did going co-ed boost female sports teams?
I think the best way to say it is we consciously developed a very vibrant athletic program. So we rolled out our male sports slowly. Actually, didn't make the decision to roll out what you is clearly the largest male sports program, which is football, until the third or fourth year. It made us very conscious of things that we might not have been doing as well for our female players and teams. And now we have 21 teams, and of those teams, we've added four women's sports since we went co-ed. And 12 of the teams are female and 9 of the teams are male.
How did you figure out the balance of men and women in the first co-ed class? What it was going to be, how that should look?
In the great scheme of things, what you would have said is, oh, yeah, let's hit for the national average, which is in the low 40s for male attendance to female. We knew it would take us about 5 years to get close to that. We're pretty close to that 40% mark now. What we kept focused on is getting good, high-quality students to the university, and we figured the percentages would fall out as they were.
And at the end of the day, if this decision at Seton Hill to go co-ed was based at least in part on revenue, how did the revenue increase? Did it alleviate some potential financial concerns that you saw down the road, particularly with the decline in the number of high school girls that wanted to attend all women's colleges?
Right. There are very clear numbers. We've doubled our enrollment since we went co-ed, increased our revenue stream at the same, actually, at a little bit better level. Probably most importantly, though, I think we are providing a better academic experience for both the women who join us and the men that join us.
As a woman, though, as you look back, I mean, clearly the way things are going, there just aren't going to be all women's colleges probably left. We may see it in our lifetime that they'll go away. How does that make you feel?
Well, I actually, by research, have a deep interest in gender equity and education. So for me, it's pretty important. I might say that I think there will always be a certain number of women's colleges.
And right now, there's less than 50, though.
How many
will there be?
I think we'll stay around 2025. That would be my prediction. I think for certain students, that will always be important. But what I think we have become mindful, particularly for the historic women's colleges, we know how to make sure we can create an equal environment for men and women in the classroom. And that knowledge has allowed us to provide high-quality education in a broader environment where women can flourish.
Marianne Gwalick is the provost and dean of the faculty at Seton Hill University. Great thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Coming up, why is Chatham University going co-ed next year? It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA. It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. Last Thursday, the Chatham University Board of Trustees approved a three-part resolution which would include the admission of men to the undergraduate community in the fall of 2015. This would make Chatham completely co-ed for the first time in its nearly 145-year existence. The controversial decision comes as a result of a steady decline in the university's enrollment and subsequent financial woes. I'm joined now in Studio A by Bill Campbell, Vice President of Marketing and Communications for Chatham University, to talk about how the resolution will affect the school and the campus community. Bill Campbell, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So what would you say led up to this decision?
This has been a decision that's been in Chatham's history, you know, for a number of years. In fact, the institution last considered this back in the early 90s. It's always been part of what Chatham has to consider and address as it goes on. About a year ago last year, there began to be a deeper study of undergraduate education as a whole at Chatham in terms of what we offer, which is a high-quality undergraduate education, but also some of the enrollment challenges that we were having as a single-sex women's college at that level. And that study and all of the elements that came along with that ultimately led to the resolution in February and then the most recent decision that was passed to go co-ed at the undergrad level.
And what were some of the things that that not only came out of that study, but just statistics that were looked at and helped move this vote?
Yeah, well, like as mentioned in the previous segment with Seton Hill, you know, studies show less than 2% of high school age women will consider a women's college. So it is a market, but it's a smaller market, and that has to be dealt with. 2008, the recession had significant impact on higher education institutions as a whole. And then lastly, high school age population demographics have been really shifting. They peaked in 2008 and have started to go down since then. And Pennsylvania actually has experienced that as well.
So there's less high school students.
Less high school students available, of which less of those are interested in considering a women's college.
What were the alternatives that might have been explored before Chatham considered the co-ed option?
Right. Well, I mean, one of the alternatives that was done in the 90s was to add co-educational graduate programs. The decision was made by the board at that time not to go co-ed, but to add these programs and then be able to try to grow the university. And that's what led it being Chatham College to Chatham University. And the graduate program's growing significantly over those years. And so that's one model that has been done, but it had been done. And so you have to look at what else can be done. So consortia models were considered, which would be where you try to create a college that runs alongside one and share resources, but there proved to be some significant resource challenges with that, as well as at the end of the day, you're kind of just doing backdoor co-education, if you think of it in certain ways. And so a couple different models were looked at. But again, at the end of the day, the economics of the decision and looking at what the market is for this type of education and the big mega trend factors hitting higher ed, this ultimately became the solution that the board chose to go with.
And what has the feedback been like? What have you been hearing from the blogs and from other sources in terms of comments and backlash?
Right. Well, like other schools that have done this, former women's colleges, you know, there are students and alumni who get a great experience, a great educational experience. They feel very passionate about that, and rightfully so. And so you do hear from a large number who truly believe in single-sex education and the benefits that gives them, and we did hear from that. We also heard from a large number of alumni who may have been opposed to it in the 90s, were for it now. The important thing to remember about Chatham is we have over 11,000 alumni, of which 6,000 are for the women's college, the rest being graduate and online programs. So we're not just a women's college anymore. We're a university with a very different makeup as a whole.
We sampled some reaction from students and alumni on the Chatham campus. Here is what the students that we talked to had to say about the decision to go co-ed.
There was something about being in a women's college that was very special to me and remains so. The way that this decision was made, we were not really given much opportunity to participate. It was as if they had already made the decision from the beginning.
Looking back, I personally don't feel that they were as transparent as they claimed they were being. Even though I'm still processing it, it sounds like there was definitely money motivating them to make this decision. The way the press release was worded, there was money, millions given to them to pursue this path. So I just feel like it just shows a lack of commitment to women's education, which is why I came here. It's why so many people came here. It's why it was one of the best decisions I made in my life to come to Chatham. I still look back and think that. And it's just not, it won't be the Chatham that I remember. And that's a shame. It feels like a death.
Honestly, I think it will radically change the campus community unless there is a very strong, concerted effort to make the history of the Women's College more readily available. And I do not believe the Women's Institute that they're creating will do that.
There's no discrimination here. Like, there's no name calling. There's no, like, putting people down. Everyone was just treated nicely, and I don't think that's going to stay the same when you admit men.
Comments from students and alumni on the Chatham University campus reacting to the decision by the Chatham Board of Trustees to make the university co-ed by the fall of 2015. So you've heard some women here saying that the students weren't consulted, Bill Campbell. There was a lack of transparency among some of the comments. What about these concerns?
Yeah, it's unfortunate to hear. I think that the board and the administration was very committed to sharing all of the information as we had it. We had two town halls for alumni on campus. We had two one for faculty and students, and another for faculty and students in student meetings as well. In addition, we had a blog where we shared all of the information that led into the data discussions of this. We streamed our events online for all of our alumnate and alumni to listen in and participate. So we took we set up a feedback loop for email. We took this input period seriously, and we did gather that feedback, and the board did look at all aspects of this decision at the end of the day. Like many other women's colleges who've gone through this, I think no matter if it takes 2 years to get to the decision or it takes a few months, many of the same kind of things and feelings and feedback happens. And I understand that. People are passionate about this education. They appreciate it. They received a high-quality education. It's not an easy decision, and there's not necessarily a 100% right way to go about it at the end of the day.
What do you think about Chatham University's decision to go co-ed? Call us at 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002 if you would like to join the conversation with Bill Campbell. He's Vice President of Marketing and Communications for Chatham University. Email is esspgh@wesa.fm and on Twitter at esspgh, and follow the conversation at #EPLive. Again, what do you think about the university's decision to go co-ed? 412-246-2002. And we have someone on the phone already. Rachel from Toledo, Ohio would like to join the conversation. Rachel, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Well, thank you for having me. I really appreciate getting the chance to ask a few questions of Bill Campbell. I'm a Chatham College alumnae. I was on campus when the trustees and voted to make the school co-ed. And there were a lot of disappointed alumnae. And one question that I do have is, Bill, you talked about how this has been a process that had been researched for a long period of time. I want to know first, how were alumni engaged in that process of researching co-education? And second, where was the transparency in this process? Many of us, I would say the majority of your, 7,000 to 11,000 alumni didn't find out about the planned proposed co-education until February 19th, 67 days before the vote was taken. I guarantee you that if the alumni had been engaged in this process prior to that, within that first year of research and studying and trying to figure out what's the best option for the health of Chatham College, they probably would have come out and offered to help rather than building a wall between the alumni and the students and the school. This is an irrevocable change at this point. There's going to be a lot that's going to happen on campus now. There are a lot of concerned alumni, there are a lot of concerned people, and we just want some transparency as far as this process went.
Bill, what about Rachel's concerns?
Well, again, I do believe that the institution, the board, the administration did a significant amount of sharing the rationale that went into this process, sharing the process of decision-making and data that led to the consideration, and created an opportunity for all of our community. Again, it's not just the alumnae or alumni that have a voice in this at the end of the day. Students, administration, faculty, the board, there are lots of other people that have to be taken into consideration as a community. And again, the idea was to go out, share as much of this information as possible, create input back, and take that input in as the board move forward with their decision.
Rachel?
I have another concern that's been in through all this process. I've seen the college decay over the last 5 to 6 years. I've seen a lack of communication and engagement between the alumni, the students, and the faculty. The school went into a certain sense of, certain form of decay under the current leadership. You bring in adjuncts, there's temporary faculty, a lot of people are leaving, admissions is dropped, and I noticed a lot of apathy within the school community as well. And I want to find out, how is co-education going to be able to solve that and revive it? How is that going to be the remedy for something for the culture of the school at this point?
Well, I think that's a misrepresentation of what's going on at Chatham University. I mean, in 2007, becoming a university, since that time, our endowment has doubled in value. We've jumped 19 spots in our U.S. News and World Report rankings. With the exception of our undergraduate women's college, we've experienced enrollment growth in all other programs across the university. Chatham University is a strong institution with a $50 million budget and growing enrollment and growing high-quality programs. The problem here has been an undergraduate women's college that, unfortunately, despite many of the best efforts of everybody for 20 plus years, just does not have the market that would need it to support it with these mega trends hitting higher education as a whole.
Thank you for the call, Rachel. Why does this not reflect a lack of commitment to women's education?
Right.
That's the big concern here.
Yeah.
So what would you say to allay those fears about the fact that the fears that women have about where the priorities are headed for Chatham University?
Right. Well, I mean, I think, you know, one of the important things, even as a co-educational university, women's leadership and women's issues has been one of our core mission initiatives. And that's been delivered not just through a single-sex classroom that we've had in the undergraduate women's college, but through our very successful centers like the Center for Women's and Entrepreneurship, our Pennsylvania Center for Women in Politics, and other issues where Chatham is a leader in the aspects of women's education and women's issues in society. The Women's Institute, which is an integral part of this proposal, is the board's and the university's commitment to continue to address what are some of the major issues that women face in society today. When Chatham was founded, access to good, high-quality education was one of the major issues of our society for women. That's not the case today with women in the majority across most higher education institutions. But there are still significant issues facing women in business, in the workforce, in politics, in issues of health and leadership. And that's what the Chatham University Women's Institute is really meant to do. Not just be in a classroom, but be on campus, be out in the community, and be really making a difference in these areas that matter.
Let's go to Carol in Oakland. She's an alumni of Wilson College, which is going co-ed. Carol, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Hello. Thank you very much. I am an alumna of Wilson College, also founded in 1869, like Chatham. Wilson College is in Chambersburg, Pennsylvania. It's been a women's college for all those years. And last year, the trustees voted, like the Chatham trustees, to become fully coeducational. They had admitted men in the graduate programs earlier, 20 years ago or so. And I feel very much that this was the right decision for Wilson and probably for Chatham. I loved my education at an all-women's school. I think that that has a lot of advantages, and I was sorry that Wilson had to come to that decision, but I think it was the right one. I had also been a professor at Bennett College in Millbrook, New York, early in my career, and I saw an all-women's school close, and that is something that neither Wilson nor Chatham would like to happen. Wilson studied very carefully how other colleges like Hood and Goucher transitioned to coeducation. And
I'm sorry, Carol, I need to jump in because we're running up to time here for this segment. But these are all good points. So what you're saying is sounds like you're applauding the decision by Chatham, saying it's.
I am. I know it's a very, very hard decision. I was a trustee at Wilson. I have friends who are trustees at Chatham. I know how difficult it is.
Chatham,
I think it in this economics and the student demography, I think that's a decision they had to make.
Carol, thank you for your call and your feedback, and we'll get Bill Campbell's reaction to that. We're going to continue our conversation with Bill Campbell, and we will continue to take your calls. Daniel in Monroeville, hang on. And if you would like to join the conversation, 412-246-2002, we're talking about Chatham University's decision to go co-ed in the fall of 2015. It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA. It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer, and we are continuing our discussion about the Chatham University Board of Trustees approving a three-part resolution that would include the admission of men to the undergraduate community in the fall of 2015. Chatham had traditionally been an all-women's institution for nearly 145 years. And I'm joined now by Bill Campbell, Vice President of Marketing and Communications for Chatham University. He continues on with us to talk about how the resolution will affect the school and the campus community. And Bill, before we went to break, we heard from Carol in Oakland, who supports Chatham's decision.
Yeah. What Carol said is a sentiment that we heard from a number of alumni and supporters of Chatham who also were in favor of this decision. And while, you know, not necessarily thrilled about having to make it, you know, accepting of why it has to be done and wanting to move forward with that as well. She also mentioned other schools that kind of inspire the way. And we did look at other women's colleges that have done this in the last two decades. And, you know, the reality is that of the nine we looked at, their enrollment increased on average over 30% within 5 years of making this change. And the other thing that's important is not only did they bring some men to the campus, but their enrollment of women increased as well. Which is an important part as the board looked at this decision.
If you'd like to join our conversation with Bill Campbell, weigh in on what you think about Chatham University's decision to go co-ed, you can call us 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. Email ESSPGH@WESA.FM and on Twitter @ESSPGH. Follow the conversation at #EPLive. Let's go to Daniel in Monroeville. Daniel, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh. Thanks for waiting.
Yes, thank you very much. I had two questions for your guests regarding Chatham and their change. The first is, within 5-10 minute driving distance of Chatham, there are several colleges, and within the area there are a huge number of colleges. Oakland is considered to be one of the largest academic areas around.
Right, you have CMU, Pitt, Carlo. So,
right. Carlo. And so the question is he not concerned that now Chatham doesn't stand out? There's nothing different about Chatham. It's not the women's college. It's now the same as every other college, and it has nothing else. It's not large. It doesn't have a national reputation. So isn't he concerned about the fact that it now just blends in as just another college? The second concern. Hey,
well, let's,
I
let's
have,
Daniel, hang on, Daniel, question. Daniel, sure. Daniel. Let's let him answer. Let's let Bill answer your first question, which is a very good question. What about Bill's concern that Chatham may not stand out in the fall of 2015 once it goes co-ed?
Right. Well, I think one of the decisions behind this move not only was going co-educational, but doing an academic reorganization to take advantage of the strength in graduate programs that Chatham has built up over the last 20 years. You know, 70% of our enrollment is a graduate and online level. We have a really strong reputation in health sciences and in sustainability with our new Eden Hall campus that we're building in Richland. That's given Chatham international recognition. We were the only North American institution recognized at the International Sustainability Campus Network for our commitment to sustainability and our plans with that campus that integrates with everything we do. Our graduate strength in health science, very strong physician's assistant, physical therapy, occupational therapy programs that will allow us to do more undergraduate enrollment into those graduate programs. All those things are very different. And I think anybody who's driven on Chatham's campus and gone up there, it is a very unique and interesting place here in Pittsburgh and around the world. And we do believe that there will be a lot of great things that are there today at Chatham that will be there tomorrow and help us stand out. And lastly, the other thing is, we're not losing – anyone who does apply, they ultimately don't choose other women's colleges. They're choosing other co-education institutions, and that's really what will make us more competitive in that space.
And definitely a Victorian-era feel to that campus up there. Daniel, very quickly, because we're running short on time, but your second question, please.
I wonder if he thought that there might be some way they could have marketed them fighting against this mega trend. Every college feels it has to be bigger and make more money and be more expensive. Couldn't he have used that marketing if they were going against that trend?
You know, again, I think these are significant changes in the market for women's colleges. When less and less young women are interested in them, and you see this trend happening not just in 2 years but over multiple years, those become something that shows you that no amount of marketing, no amount of passion, no amount of additional money may ultimately move the needle in the ways you need. These are big, big changes, and institutions that change today will be the institutions that thrive.
Let's go to Shirley in Pittsburgh. Shirley, welcome to the show.
Good afternoon. I'm a Chatham alum, and I agree with one of the earlier callers that the process seems very, very, very quick in terms of our awareness and participation in it. In fact, I really didn't learn anything until it was pretty much a done deal. But my point is that, and I think your marketing person from Chatham made this comment in a different light, the international piece. I think that there are just numerous opportunities to reach out to women internationally. There are women all over the globe that are would like to have an education. In some cases, their lives are at risk for trying to seek one. And I think just joining the co-educational pack, so to speak, because that's the trend and that's what the trends seem to indicate is a good decision, is one possible decision and it may work out.
So Shirley,
very rich and very vital.
I'm going to cut to the chase here, Shirley. Sure, I'm sorry to cut you off here, but I just wanted we're running really short on time, and it sounds like what you're asking is why wasn't more of a push made to recruit female students from around the globe from other countries? And it's a very good question. And why wasn't that done, Bill?
Well, it actually was done. And our international enrollment had been one that had increased, as well as our transfer students. The issue here at the end of the day for our undergraduate enrollment was what we call first-time, first-year students, freshmen from our schools. This is about 17- and 18-year-old young women who do not want to choose an undergraduate women's college. We've diversified.
But let me jump in. When you go to the CMU campus, for example, you see a lot of women who and there are many students there who are from other countries in Asia and Europe. And Chatham's a small university to begin with. Are you saying that you couldn't have come up with hundreds, if not thousands, more women to enroll and keep it as a viable – keep that university a viable all-women's college?
With just a – I mean, again, we have grown international enrollment. As a regional private institution, we draw from – most students go to school within 200 to 500 miles of their home. To be a vibrant regional institution here in Pittsburgh, we need to make sure not only can we diversify and grow into international enrollment, but we also have to be able to attract the best and the most number of students that we can locally and regionally as well.
Let's go to Samuel in Pittsburgh, driving through Pittsburgh. Samuel, very quickly, we're running short on time. Go ahead with your comment or question.
Hello?
Yes.
So I'm just a student at a small liberal arts school in Eastern PA, and I just think I had a professor who told me if you want to make somebody really angry, treat them like it's the real world. And the real world does have both males and females in it. So it seems to me that if you really want to teach women how to be successful leaders in the real world, they have to be exposed to the competition of the opposite sex. So the entire ideal is just kind of unrealistic.
Okay, thank you, Samuel. Samuel says it's unrealistic to have an all-women's college. Let's go to Jeff in Pittsburgh. Jeff, welcome. Go ahead with your comment or question.
I just wanted to say that my son actually went to Seton Hill University the first year that it accepted male students there, and he got a great education, and the college seems to be doing very well. They added a baseball team, and he was on it, and they actually went to the NAIA World Series. So it's a good thing for any college to have combined type like that. So
all right,
just
Jeff,
wanted to throw that out there.
Thank you. Appreciate that, Jeff in Pittsburgh. And one last call we'll take from Erica. Erica, quick comment, please. Go ahead.
Yes, hi. Went to a girls' school, Mount Holyoke. It's still all girls in Massachusetts and shares courses with, you know, Amherst, Smith, UMass. And I'm sure, and it had a capital campaign very recently and raised so much money, it was more than they were, the capital campaign. So I don't think money's the issue here. I think there's something else going on, and I'm not invested in Chatham, so I don't, you know, I'm interested, though, that another girls' school has gone co-ed. My sister went to Wilson.
All right. Well, thank you, Erica. We are out of time, but she does raise the point that maybe it's too soon to give up on the notion of maintaining of all women's colleges and universities being financially viable. Bill Campbell, Vice President of Marketing and Communications for Chatham University, has been our guest. We have come to time. Bill, thank you for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
And thank you for listening to Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer, and we'll see you again tomorrow with another edition of Essential Pittsburgh.